Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. The time is 9 a.m. Monday, February 7th, 2011. With me today is Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Thomas, Senator Egan, and Senator McGuire. And Senator Hoffman is excused and may be joining us at the end of the meeting, depending on how long we go. And myself, Senator Stedman. We have two bills on the agenda this morning. We're going to start with Senate Bill number 3, funding for school meals. Then we'll move on to House Bill 16, which is extend senior benefit payment program. The first bill up, Senate Bill 3 by Senator Wilikowski regarding funding for school meals. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to hear from the sponsor, have him introduce the bill, take public testimony, and then set the bill aside for further review. And I see Senator Wilikowski's not here, but he has a, if she can come forward, representation from Senator Wilikowski's office. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then walk us through the bill, please.
For the record, my name is Christy Harvey. I'm a staffer for Senator Bill Wilikowski, and the senator regrets he cannot be here this morning, although I'm hopeful that he'll be here as soon as he can. And I'd also like to thank Senator Hoffman, Senator Stedman, and the entire Finance Committee for hearing this bill.
Maybe before we get rolling, we just need to reflect for the record that Senator Giesel has joined us also. Go ahead and continue, please.
Of course. I know that this bill was heard in a very similar form last year, so I'll be brief in my testimony. And I have a PowerPoint to go along. Since there are a lot of numbers with this, I figured it might be easier to follow along if there were words on a screen that we could look at as well. So this, of course, is Senate Bill 3. This is the bill that would provide added funding for school breakfasts and lunch. And I like to multitask, and so this is actually a three-goal bill. We hope that with getting these additional funds to schools, we'll have more schools serving meals, we'll have more kids in each school fed, and we'll be able to improve the quality of the meals that are served in the schools. The first problem, of course, is that we have many, many kids in Alaska who are in need. A rather striking statistic is one out of every 8 Alaska families has struggled to put enough food on the table each year. There are also some other statistics that underscore this. 74,000 Alaskans seek food assistance every year, and of those, 43% of the households that are visiting our food pantries have children in the households under the age of 18. However, these students are not all being reached. There are approximately 51,000 Alaskan children who are eligible for reduced or free lunch in our schools. So far, we have six. We're doing a pretty good job. We've got 6 school districts that, however, are not offering breakfast or lunch, and 15% of the schools that don't participate in the school lunch program don't offer breakfast. And so overall, we've got about 60% of our lower-income kids in Alaska who are not being reached by the school lunch and breakfast program. We also, of those schools that do offer, we aren't doing quite as well as we might want to be doing in participation in these projects, in these programs. We are currently 9th from the bottom in the nation. Of participation from all of the kids who are available to have low-income, free or reduced meals who are actually being reached. And for a lot of these kids, unfortunately, this may be the only access to real food that they may have. It's a very sad statistic. The schools are also in need. For last year, the schools in Alaska served about 3.6 million breakfasts. But as you can see from this, we do get a lot of money from federal reimbursements for this project. But the federal reimbursement has not kept up since the inception of this program with the need from schools. So a lot of schools are having to dip into their operating budgets. So as you can see here, the average cost to prepare breakfast in both our road system and rural schools is not matching up with the federal reimbursement that they're receiving. The same holds true for our lunches. We've got about 19 million lunches served in Alaska. That's paid, reduced, and free. And those reimbursement rates are also not quite keeping track. So here's a breakdown of really what we're looking at here. Even with federal subsidies, Alaska schools are falling, according to the Department of Education and Early Development, about $9 million short. That's the green in this pie chart, is how much the schools are having to dip, unfortunately, into their operating budgets to cover the costs of the school lunches and breakfasts. We're hoping that this program, while not covering all of that, will at least cover a bit and help the schools out a bit. And I know that one of the duties that this legislature is tasked with, and one that I know everyone in this room takes very, very seriously, is being good stewards of Alaska's money. So I realize that the question is not, should we feed kids? I am fairly confident everyone in this room would say, of course. The question is this the best use of state funds to do this? And we need to make sure that every dollar is, of course, stretched as much as possible and that we get as much bang for our buck. And I believe this is a very smart investment in Alaska's future. It actually provides a twofer system of returns. One, we've got short-term returns on this investment. Then we also have some long-term returns on this investment. In the short term, we have many studies, and I'll run through them very quickly, but we see when kids are fed, better academic performance, better test scores, fewer kids going to the principal, better attendance, better health, lower obesity. But in the long term, it's harder to extrapolate these, but there have been studies that shown that better attendance equal lower dropout rates, and lower dropout rates equal lower prison populations, and there have been studies that definitively show that our kids who graduate from high school end up with higher incomes and better quality of life in many cases. So I'll go very quickly through some of these short-term effects. If anyone is interested, I have a very large packet of a bibliography of all of these studies. I didn't want to overwhelm you with paper, but I have that available if anyone would like to see it. Here are just a few of the ones that jumped out at me. For example, the better academic performance. Various studies have shown that when kids are fed, they do better on their comprehensive testing. They have better attention, better memory, and better verbal fluency, as well as better grades in language, reading, and math, and they participate more in class. And I guess this makes sense if any of you have ever been faced with trying to wrangle a hungry toddler or even a hungry staffer who has missed lunch. You know that sometimes attention can be lacking and focus can be lacking when people are hungry. We also see better memory and listening skills. And there was even a fascinating study, if you're a little wonky like I am, that showed how brain function is actually altered when you eat breakfast throughout the rest of your day. We also see better behavior, and I'm from a family of teachers, and I know that one of the challenges that they all face is having the one or two kids in their classroom who take all of the attention because they're disruptive or have behavioral problems, and it really hurts the rest of the class. And so if we're able to reach these kids and calm them and better their behavior, it really does help for a lot of the school. So tests have shown that kids who eat breakfast and lunch are calmer. In the morning, they're more obedient. And there's a list of things called oppositional scores, which are whether or not kids are likely to break rules, be quicker to anger than other kids in their age group. And researchers noted a significant decrease in oppositional scores in schools where a higher participation of students were eating breakfast. As I mentioned, you also see fewer disciplinary actions needing to be taken and fewer emotional problems in the schools in which the hunger needs of the children are being reached. We also see better attendance, and this may not seem like a big deal on its face, but it actually has a lot of ramifications down the road. There are higher rates of attendance and declines in tardiness for kids in schools where breakfast is served. And as one teacher I spoke to said, kids want to get together in the morning and socialize. So they're either going to do it in front of the building, at the bus stop, or if there's orange juice and eggs and toast, they're likely to get together, socialize there, they meet the nutritional skills, and then bam, they're just down the hallway from their first class. And so they've really enjoyed that angle of it. And finally, from the short-term effects, better health. Kids from food insecure households, that's a fancy way of saying hungry households, are significantly less likely to become overweight when they have a steady nutritional source of food that they can access. As I'm sure we all know, cheap food tends to be higher in fat, higher in sugar, higher in salt. So if they have access to affordable, nutritious food, it really does make a big difference. And students who eat are also more likely to participate in physical activity. They've got the energy they need for that. Currently, about a quarter of Alaskans are considered obese. It's a trend that has been rising, and it comes at a price. There was a recent study that showed that in the United States, by 2018, we'll be spending a huge chunk of our income on medical-related expenses. About $344 billion is projected. So I say any investment we can make to bring that down and save us some money in the long term is a good one. So here's the proposal in a nutshell. We'd like to have 35 cents additional in state funds for breakfast and 15 cents for lunch. These numbers were achieved by looking at what many of the other states in the nation are doing. We're one of only 12 that does not have a state fund match for the federal program for meals. And using those percentages, this is what our state came up with. We have a lot of support for this from schools, school boards, and assistance groups. This is just a quick overview. I have more, but I didn't want to completely crowd the screen so we couldn't see. And the bottom line is, we believe that Senate Bill 13 is a solid investment in the future with short-term and long-term payoffs. We also think that we spend a lot of money on education here in Alaska. We give a lot of money to our schools, and this is a small investment that allows our students to access the greatest reward from the schooling programs. And by setting our kids up for success now, we may be able to avoid costly programs in the future, or costly problems in the future. This concludes our presentation for Senate Bill 3. Thank you very much. And I'm open and willing to take any questions at this time, please.
Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you remind me again what the federal threshold or the threshold is for both the reduced rate and the paid or the completely supplemented?
The chair, of course, for the reduced rate for a household size of two, let's say, for reduced, it's $33,000 a year plus change, and for free, it's $23,000. And for a household size of, say, four, it's $51,000 a year for the reduced priced meals and $35,000 a year for free meals. And that, Senator Thomas, is the numbers of the federal poverty level that have been adjusted for the state of Alaska. Okay, thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Harvey, as we look at this bill and we look at the numbers that are here, it's fairly disturbing that so many children don't have access, according to at least some of the reports that you're presenting. Now, I was wondering, those six school districts, what is their distribution throughout the state? Are they more in rural areas? Are they in urban areas? Or do you have any idea of where that might be?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I believe that they are distributed throughout the state. I know that there is a greater number in our rural areas simply because it is so much more expensive to both ship fuel or ship food to our rural areas and also to purchase food in our rural areas. So I'm afraid that they may have the bulk of the students or the bulk of the schools not meeting the students' needs, and hopefully this will provide some help for that. There is also in this bill they are going to adjust these numbers through the district cost factors to adjust for the needs of our rural schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as we look at the fiscal note on this, you're anticipating it to be more than $2.1 million?
Through the chair, I believe these factors have been taken into consideration already, but I will leave questions for the fiscal note to the department who is here to discuss that in more detail.
And one final question or comment, Mr. Chairman, has to do with the explanation of the changes on your sponsor statement having to do with 15 cents for each lunch and 35 cents for each breakfast. If that's going to increase, especially in the rural areas, 15 cents is almost insignificant out there when you're dealing with the high cost of transportation, and that's why I was wondering what the distribution of it was. It may, it'd probably be a big factor if you had the road or some kind of surface transportation, but when you're dealing with air transportation, especially for smaller schools that have smaller populations, if you multiply 15 cents times the small number of students, it'd be hard to go ahead and make ends meet.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I would love for this bill to be able to cover all of our students completely, and I would love if we could do this in such a way that it wouldn't tap into the school budgets of any of these schools. Unfortunately, we probably are not able to do that, but these were the numbers that were crunched that came up, so it was comparable to other states, and I do believe that using the district cost factors, the rural schools do get an additional amount of funding that should help to offset at least a little bit these costs, but I agree, I wish it could be a lot more as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one short question. The federal maximum reimbursement, we take that literally, that is it, it is that maximum, it's not have some relationship to what the state may contribute, or it's set at that amount, a certain amount.
Through the chair, correct. This is the maximum amount based on need that the federal government reimburses, and that is for the severe need. That is for the students who receive the free breakfasts and lunches. So that as the maximum, and oftentimes the state does not, or the federal government will not reimburse to that maximum amount. So currently, the schools put out about $58 million each year for these meals, and the federal government, I believe, reimburses them $36 million, I believe, was the number. So there is a gap. Some of that is made up by students purchasing meals, your paid students and your reduced price students, but that still does leave approximately a $9 million gap.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've seen no further initial questions. Is there anybody from the administration here to speak to this bill?
Yes, sir.
Come on up.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget to do the sign-up sheet so I know you're from the department and who you are. If you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then speak to the bill, please.
Great. Good morning, Chair Stedman and committee members. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Noodleman, and I'm the Director of School Finance at the Department of Education. And I'm here to speak to the fiscal note for Senate Bill 3 and answer any questions. This bill creates a new state program that provides school districts supplemental state funding for the existing federal national school and lunch breakfast programs. Currently, districts receive approximately $32 to $36 million in federal funding for the NSLP program. The total expenditures are approximately $58 million. And the difference there is between paid meals and $9 million that districts transfer from their operating funds into this NSLP school lunch and breakfast program. The required federal match for this program is $492,000, and that's met from the $9 million that's transferred from school operating funds. The bill would not necessarily increase the number of students participating, but would provide approximately $2 million to school districts to use for breakfast and lunch programs or to offset the $9 million transferred from operating funds. Senate Bill 3 provides state aid on a per-meal basis for each free and reduced lunch. The breakfast rate is 35 cents plus a prorated cost differential based on one-fourth of the cost differentials set in law for the foundation program. The lunch rate is 15 cents plus a prorated cost differential. In addition, beginning July 1st, 2012, there's a cost of living index based on the Anchorage CPI. Page one of the fiscal note shows the required funding, $2.1 million in 2012, $2.3 million in 2013, $2.3 million in 2014, $2.4 million in 2015, $2.5 million in 2016, and $2.6 million in 2017. I would like to walk through just the first page of the calculation of the fiscal note. On page three, for the first year, On the left-hand column is the school districts. The next column shows us the estimated number of breakfasts that are served. Next, we have the cost differential for each district. When that is added to the 35-cent breakfast rate, we have each district's reimbursement rate for breakfast at 49 cents for Alaska Gateway, bringing that to a total of $16,930 for Alaska Gateway. And again, the calculation for the lunch begins with the estimated amount of lunch. The cost differential is added to the 15 cents for Alaska Gateway for the reimbursement rate for that district to be 29 cents. Multiplying that by the number of federally reimbursed lunches is 12,630. So the funding in the first year of this bill to Alaska Gateway is $29,560. Reading down the right-hand column, each district that participates in the NSLP program's funding is identified for a total of $2.1 million statewide. One other item, on page 4, at the top of the page, you can see where the calculation beginning in 2012 includes an Anchorage CPI, and that increases the rate. Alaska Gateway's rate went from 49 cents in the prior year to 51 cents in the current year, and each district's rate is increased by that CPI. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Has there been any thought on the fiscal impact of the six schools that do not offer the lunch or breakfast program, if they're going to want to, or if they don't have the facilities, build facilities so they can? And what school districts are the six?
Excuse me. Chair Stedman, the six schools that are currently not offering the program are very small schools, and there's not any indication that this level of funding would get them to where they would have a commercial kitchen with stoves and three sinks and other items that are necessary. Those six districts are Aleutian Region, Chugach, Denali, Pelican, Pribilof, and Tanana. And in total, that's 490 students.
Okay. And then the ones that offer lunch but no breakfast, is this going to, or did you look into that when you created the fiscal note to see if those folks that aren't doing breakfast then will start doing breakfast?
I don't have as definitive of an answer for you on that. We did not find anything that clearly showed that districts would add breakfasts where they didn't already have them. Again, the amount of money, there would be other hurdles to overcome in order to add breakfast programs.
Okay. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and through the chair, and I support the bill's sponsor's intention, and that's why I agreed to be on the bill, the idea of getting kids, again, it's an ovarian lottery, so wherever we can help kids at the starting gate to get a meal in their belly so that they can have an opportunity for an education, I'm supportive. But I, too, have asked some questions following in the chair's. One, I wonder as well, not only will the schools who don't currently offer breakfast and lunch, will they, as the sponsor statement says, be encouraged to offer these programs? That's number one. And then number two, will more students actually be added to these programs by providing for a state match? And I've also never heard a definitive answer. One of the things that I get nervous about these kinds of things, if we put this into law without a sunset and a guaranteed CPI increase, is will these programs just increase in terms of their funding and become enriched, but no more students will be added? And thirdly, I'd like to see more state agriculture programs grow as a result of it. The Ciscos and the out-of-state companies that get enriched from it, you know, with the high-fat foods that are filling up our cafeterias, I'm not as interested in as well, and I've also asked to see some feedback on that, so I'd love to follow up with the bill's sponsor on that. What other creative alternatives are out there in terms of what we're actually feeding our children, and whether some Alaska-based companies can benefit from these long-term contracts that we're putting in place with a bill like this with a guaranteed funding stream?
There's probably a question there somewhere, but
Three follow-ups that I'd like to hear some more definitive answers from. Are more students going to be added? Are more schools going to be added? And then finally, are more companies going to be approached in terms of the contracts themselves?
And maybe when you get back to the committee, we can take a look at the fiscal note and then give us a percentage of the students involved in the school districts. I think we've got head counts now for, you know, the fall numbers, so we can get an idea of the percentage of the each district's use of the program. And then does the administration have a position on this bill?
No, the administration does not have a position on the bill.
Okay. I assume they have a position that the children should eat.
Yes, they. Okay. The administration does value children and believes they should eat.
Okay. Couple, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, just to clear up a misunderstanding that I apparently had on the bills, when the PowerPoint was going on, one of the notes was that six school districts do not offer breakfast or lunch, but I'm assuming that these aren't entire school districts that don't offer that, that just schools within these districts offer that. Is that correct? But, and you named off the six there, Aleutian East, Chugach, Denali, Pelican, Pribilof, and Tandon.
Through the chair, Senator, six districts do not offer either lunch or breakfast.
The entire district?
Correct. One of those districts is Pelican. They have approximately 14 students, and they, in general, are small districts. In addition to the six that don't offer breakfast or lunch, an additional 10 districts don't participate in the breakfast program. And an SLP requires you to first participate in lunch, and then you can add breakfast.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions for the administration? Okay, thank you. We've touched on the fiscal note. There is one fiscal note in your packet from the Department of Education and Early Development with six pages of attached spreadsheets showing cost differential for each school district. The fiscal note reflects a $2,143,000 general fund appropriation in FY12. There is currently no funding for this program in the governor's budget. There is roughly a 4-5% annual increase in the cost of this program based on adjusting the base allowance using the Anchorage CPI. What I'd like to do now, if there's no questions from the committee, we're going to go to the online. We've got about six people here, so it should go fairly fast. What I'd like you to do is identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and then speak to the bill in front of us, please. I'll start with the Bethel LIO, Gary Baldwin.
Okay, this is Gary Baldwin. I'm superintendent of Lower Kuskokwim School District in Southwest Alaska. Just a brief explanation of our district. We are the largest rural school district in the state with 3,950 students and 27 different schools. Five of those schools are here in Bethel, and the other 22 are located in villages that are scattered across 24,000 square miles. Our schools have enrollments that range from 475 down to 14 students in our smallest school. All 27 of our schools are Title I schools, and district-wide, over 90% of our students qualify for free and reduced school meals.
Mr. Baldwin, can I get you to speak a little louder, please? We're having trouble hearing you.
Yeah, I'll get a little closer here. Can you hear me now?
A little better.
Okay. All 27 of our schools are Title I schools, and district-wide, over 90% of our students qualify for free and reduced meals. And without our breakfast programs, a lot of our kids wouldn't eat anything until lunchtime. So it's pretty important. Because of the high cost of labor, distance from food sources, and shipping, we have to subsidize the revenue that we receive from the federal government. In the last fiscal year, we transferred $203,000 from our regular instruction budget into our food services fund. And that's funding that could have provided curriculum materials, teachers, paraprofessionals to help our students achieve better academically. Our board and administration are aware of the body of research that shows that proper nutrition improves student learning. As a result, we've worked hard to improve the diet of our students. We've adopted comprehensive nutrition policies. We've got the grants that provide extra produce for our students. And although our school meal program meets the minimum standards, we'd like to add more to the quality of our lunch program, more nutritional quality, without pulling additional funds from our educational funding. Senate Bill 3 would provide additional funding that is dedicated to improving the nutritional value of our students, and it would protect our educational funding for its intended use. And so I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this bill, and I'll be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. We are starting on the western side of the state, and we're going to work towards the east. Next location is Fairbanks. Amy Rose, if you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Good morning. My name is Amy Rouse, and I am the Director of Nutrition Services with the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District and a member of the Alaska School Nutrition Association. I'd like to share some information and ask that you move Senate Bill 3 forward. Currently, 31% or 4,235 of our students qualify to receive their meals at the free or reduced rate. On average, we serve 1,500 reimbursable breakfasts and 5,000 reimbursable lunches per day. These meals are nutritionally well-balanced, meet federal guidelines, and provide our students with a wide variety of fresh produce, low-fat and whole grain entrees, and freshly made bread items. Excuse me. In the month of January, we served over 28,000 breakfasts and 101,000 lunches. 80% of the breakfasts and 58% of the lunches were served to students who qualified to receive meals at the free or reduced rates. Our meal programs are extremely important to those who live in a variety of households, such as food poor, military, migrant, those who are struggling to make ends meet, and to those who don't have a permanent home, like the 300-plus homeless and children in transition in our district. I have worked in school nutrition for almost 20 years. Many things have changed, but the understanding that if children are hungry, they cannot learn has not. Every day, school nutrition professionals throughout our great state see students who have not received a meal since they left school the previous day. We take great pride in ensuring that our students receive the best we can afford to provide and to serve meals the students want to eat. For years, it was the expectation of many school districts that the Nutrition Services Department generate enough revenue to cover expenses. Over the years, this has become increasingly difficult, but we have not compromised the nutritional integrity of our meals as a result of rising costs. The amount of funds available through federal reimbursement and from the price of paid school meals does not cover the food, non-food supply, transportation costs, and labor associated with producing school meals. We are getting creative in our attempts to cut costs, but it has not and is not enough. Simply put, school nutrition programs are running out of funds. You can make a difference and have a direct impact on state funding for school nutrition programs. I believe I speak for many when I say the funds included in Senate Bill 3 would help us continue to provide the meals that many have come to expect and will continue to expect as we feed future generations of Alaskans. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we'll go to Sitka. Dolores Farrell, please, if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill.
I actually represent a ecumenical group that is trying to get more programs into schools. I do not have the figures on where the district is as far as free and reduced prices, but I really applaud the woman from Fairbanks who just spoke to very, very well, spoke to the needs and has an understanding of the quality of food. I think this is the big... Oh, I'm Dory Farrell. I'm sorry. I think this is the big breakdown. I think that we need to offer nutrition information, and we need to be sure that the food offerings are nutritious before we supplement any programs, and that we do have enough oversight that that can actually be followed up on. I think there should be nutritionists or dietitians at some level. This woman from Fairbanks obviously was. I think we need to look at basic food groups, and I think we need to look at perhaps returning to more scratch foods, prepared from scratch, rather than prepared foods that are brought in that are often very, very high and undesirable elements that we really don't want in foods. And would someone please speak to the hurdles that we have to overcome to add breakfast to this offering? Right now it's being done at two schools in this district, but that's only at the behest of a couple of the counselors in those two elementary schools. At the junior high, we've run into a tremendous question of stigma, which I really don't think the administrators are handling well. I think there's a way to reach these kids who need it without them becoming the object of bullying or teasing by other students. Those are some of the things that I have on my list. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We will now go to Rangel. Therese Ashton, if you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope you can hear me well. Good morning. My name is Therese Ashton from Wrangell, Alaska, and I'm the principal for Evergreen Elementary School and the federal program director for Wrangell Public Schools. We have 318 students with three school sites. Now, Wrangell Public Schools was one of the districts that did not have a food service program until last year. It was a need that our school board and district thought would be cost prohibitive to provide. At the elementary school, my staff and I knew that taking care of the basic needs of the student was the first thing we need to do to make sure they are ready for learning. It shouldn't be our primary focus, but the reality of this is that not all students come to us fed and rested or emotionally prepared for a day of learning. My staff has, in the past, with many educators around the state, take care of those basic needs however we can. Last year, our superintendent, Woody Wilson, was able to get startup funds for a food program and began a contract with our local vendor to provide meals for our students. The business manager and I worked together to get a process and personnel in place to serve breakfast and lunch. 60%, actually over 60% this time, of our students do qualify for free or reduced prices. And as a coordinator of this program, I know that we have a continuing problem of families struggling to pay even the reduced amount. I also see how close families are to qualifying for reduced meals but must pay the full price and how they are not able to participate fully. The food program has strict guidelines for what we serve and how much. And in fact, the biggest complaint I've received is from students who are asking for larger portions. Now, when I called around to the school sites last year to check in on the program after the first couple of days after we set up, one of the secretaries told me how amazing it was that students were not coming into her first thing in the morning with headaches, stomach aches, and students were not being sent to the office because of behavioral issues. a substitute told me that students weren't asking to go to the vending machines because they were hungry. Many teachers noticed the difference in mood and behaviors that were more conducive to learning. Providing any support for the food programs in the state is one way to help take care of students in a positive fashion so that educators can prepare these students for the challenges of the 21st century life, where each student should be able to be creative problem solvers, collaborative workers, and quality producers. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. That concludes our off-net, I think. Well, we've got two more here. We're going to jump up to Anchorage. And Carol Como, please, if you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill.
Thank you very much. This is Carol Como. I'm the superintendent of the Anchorage School District, and I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 3. I don't want to repeat all the testimony that I've just heard. I think we believe the need is significant in the state of Alaska. Right now in Anchorage, we have 41% of our students qualify for free or reduced lunch, and the number is growing. It's been just a few years ago that it was about 35%, so we're seeing the poverty rate grow in Anchorage as our population changes. This small amount of funding for the breakfast and lunch would make a huge difference in us being able to buy increased fruits and vegetables to add to the lunches and breakfasts which we already provide. The meals, even though a lot of people don't like the meals, they do meet the requirements for nutrition. They are healthy meals, but they are not always the choices students would like to, you know, eat. We think additional fruits and vegetables would make them far more palatable to the students. The other thing I'd like to speak to is we have also added funding from the general fund for reserve funds that we give to the nurses at our schools, as in the middle schools and high schools, for students who may not qualify for free and reduced lunch for whatever reason, but they come to school obviously hungry without food. And so we're able to provide some money out of the general fund for that. We also have gone to a system where students do not need to be identified as they go through the lines, whether they're on free or reduced lunch. They have a card that they can just use as a swipe card in our system, and they can go in, and then it's logged in that way. So we do not have the embarrassment factor that others have spoken to in the middle schools and the high schools, and our elementary students the same. So I don't want to elaborate beyond that. We believe this is a good bill. We strongly support it and think it would make a big difference in our ability to offer healthier breakfast and lunches in the Anchorage School District.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to Bob Crumley, please, if you can identify yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Certainly. Thank you very much. This is Bob Crumley, superintendent with Chugach School District. We're a very small school district in Prince William Sound, and about 15 years ago, our school board decided to do away with our participation in the National School Lunch Program. They had a lot of reasons, and mainly it was we were paying somebody, a staff member, quite a salary to manage the national paperwork and the requirements, some of those impractical requirements. In place of that, they started a school breakfast program, completely funded out of our general fund. For the many years since, we've operated that just fine, although it's becoming more and more expensive. We know that this is the only healthy nutritional meal that many of our students receive every day. And in addition to making sure they start the day off with a good meal, this program also increases our attendance. Many of those students show up in the morning just because they know they're going to get a good breakfast. We're currently exploring options and regarding going back to this National School Lunch Program, school meal program, because it is getting so expensive, and we welcome any support. Senate Bill 3 would provide
So your testimony is concluded, Mr. Crumley?
It is. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes our off-net. I'd like to come into the room. There's, even though there's no one signed up, is there anybody that wants to come forward and speak to this bill? You can come forward, identify yourself for the record, and then for just as a general note, if you want to testify on a bill where you have sign-up sheets, we need your name and so on and so forth on the sheet, and then the, that will be delivered here, and I'll go through it as it is presented. You can introduce yourself for the record, please, and who you represent and speak to the bill.
Yes, my name is Robert Eason. I'm the president of the Alaska School Nutrition Association and a coordinator of food services for the North Slope Borough School District. There were questions over the internet about the regulation, who would watch over the United States Department of Agriculture's program, is the free and reduced program, which our state child Department of Education Child Nutrition Services does an excellent job of regulating. They have a wonderful program that has developed each year over the last 6 years that check the program's integrity, and they regulate it very closely with their dietitians doing checking the menus, making sure they meet the USDA regulations. Also, something I hadn't heard mentioned, the reauthorization that will take place July 1st, 2012 is going to increase the costs of our lunch programs because of increased fruits and vegetables. So as our prices keep going up, it is very important that we get support from the state. And so I completely support Senate Bill 3. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else in the audience want to come forward? Okay, come on up. Well, you've been here lots of times. You know to get on the sign-up sheet.
I did sign up, Mr. Chairman.
I don't see it in front of me.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'll try to keep my comments brief. We support the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 3. I think much of the research and comments that have already been made make an excellent point. I would just share with you that research also suggests that learning environments for young students that are warm, dry, safe, and free of distraction is ideal for is an ideal environment for student learning. Hunger is a huge distraction for children and hinders the attention span and the ability to focus. I think that Christy Harvey did an excellent job sharing some information with you. I think it's extensive and accurate, and AASB concurs with her findings. We support this bill, and I will share with you, I used this in testimony in the other body. There was an article out on the 27th of January from the Chicago Tribune. 410,000 students are going to enter into this breakfast program. 80% of them qualify for free and reduced lunch. Because I have a sick sense of humor, the ad was Slim Fast, Hallelujah. I'm a sick guy, I'm sorry. The point is, there is some objection to this, and I wanted to bring this up. There were 1,100 parents who got signatures that said that this would cut into teaching time. Those 1,100 parents who signed this come from more affluent districts. I think that their children receive breakfast and lunch. There's a different perspective out there, and I just wanted to make that note. There's a gulf of difference between the people in our communities. Some people are fortunate to be able to provide their children with certain benefits when they go to school, and some people aren't. So I wanted to make that point that in Chicago, 410,000 kids are going to move next month to breakfast, and they still need to figure out how they're going to find it, but the evidence was overwhelming, and that's why they're going to do it. I would just close by saying that the association advocates for children and youth. We assist local school boards in providing a quality education focused on student achievement through effective local governance. And it's because of that mission that drives us to support this piece of legislation, and I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rose, thank you very much for presenting this morning. One of the concerns that I had was brought up by actually the superintendent from Anchorage, having to do with the palatability of some of the meals that they're there. They're probably going to be lower salt content, lower fat. Is that going to be a problem with the children not eating the meal or eating not eating a large portion of the meal? Where they're throwing it away? Well, what are your thoughts on that? And I guess more importantly, how can we make it so that some of these healthy meals are more taste oriented, so that they can continue or have good nutrition?
Senator Olson, through the chair. There are a number of situations that exist in schools right now, and I also think that there are some fundraising efforts that include concession stands that could be in competition with lunches. I think most school districts are going to do everything they can to provide a quality lunch. I believe that across our state, most of these lunches, especially free and reduced lunches, there is no other option. So the majority of the people that we talk to in school districts that are with the association, they look at this as almost a lifeline in terms of providing breakfast and lunch. I would comment that some of the school districts are not providing breakfast, as I understand it. They shared it with me this last week. They simply don't have the facilities to be able to do some of this, and that's some of the concerns.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if you're, Mr. Rose, if you're prepared to answer or not, but the question was raised by somebody that testified regarding the identification of students, whether they're receiving a paid or supplemented or reduced or free lunch. And my understanding from earlier testimony in another committee was that, in fact, at least some school districts, that is not discernible because there is an account set up for the kid, and it's not like you have a blue card and you have a red card or something like that. So I don't know if you're prepared, but if you could explain that a little bit if you're knowledgeable of it.
Senator Thomas, through the chair, all of our school districts are very cognizant of that embarrassment factor and do what they can to try to not to have the identity of people who are receiving free and reduced lunches broadcast in their districts. There are a number of different ways they go about doing that. But I would have to share with you, there are some areas of our state that have large free and reduced lunch enrollments, and it really is not an issue. So I know that my school board members are very cognizant of this and do everything that they can to try to eliminate that the discomfort for some students of being viewed as being on free and reduced lunch.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you for your testimony. Okay. We can have the bill sponsor come forward, please. Maybe you could help us with the previous question and get back to the committee on the issue of how the identifying process goes through or the payment or whatever. I think Superintendent Como also spoke to it. Also the waste factor, I've heard numbers upwards of 35% or so it ends up in the trash can. Also give some consideration to there is no sunset date, and then there's a CPI factor. Also, if you can come back, as mentioned earlier, with an update on the data so we can look at the schools, the percentage of meals relative to the population, and then include even the ones that, like Pelican and the other ones that are zeroed out, so we see the entire school and system. And then for timing purposes, we have a possibility of an immediate effective date issue to take a look at, if you can look at that. There could possibly be a timing issue, depending on if we pass this legislation, the governor signs it, when he signs it, and then 90 days thereafter.
So 90,
yeah, 90 days thereafter may put that into the school year, beginning of the school year, which would be problematic. Do we have any other questions for the bill sponsor or concerns that we want him to work on? Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair. And just those a couple questions that I had. The chairman had one of the questions in common with me. What conversations have you had, again, with communities that don't offer both breakfast and lunch? We heard that the program requires you to offer lunch first, then add breakfast. What assurances do we have that this bill will encourage them to do that? And what might we add to the bill to really get them to do it, since that's one of the purposes? Secondly, how many more students do we think we can get added by the bill so that the bill doesn't just supplant and put more money into the program, that we actually expand and get more bellies filled? And then finally, how can we open it up to more Alaska companies as opposed to the Cisco's and those? And I liked Senator Olson's questions about the tastiness of the food. And I'm just wondering, when I think about Matanuska Valley and Delta and places that we have our good farmers at work, if there are some companies out there that provide nutritious, tasty meals, what their cost factor is, and if they had something like this, that a good contract, what that would be like.
Okay, we have any other final questions? Final comments?
Senator Stedman, and through the chair, Senator McGuire, I have my marching orders and my homework cut out for me, and I will attempt to get answers to all of these questions to come back to you so that you have a more well-rounded picture of the entire bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside. Go on to the next item on the agenda, which is House Bill 16 by Representative Hawker, who is here. This extending the senior benefit payment program. And again, it's just a reminder for the audience, if you want to testify on the bill, make sure you sign up as we roll forward here, because this is the first hearing on the bill. The intent today is to allow the sponsor to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and then we'll set the bill aside for the review. With that, we have, we are joined by Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I very sincerely appreciate the opportunity to present to the Senate Finance Committee House Bill 16, which extends the senior benefits payment program. I speak on behalf of myself and my 14 Senate co-sponsors of this bill. House Bill 16 extends the Alaska Senior Benefits Program for 4 years. As folks will recall, that program was established in 2007. It is set to sunset this coming June 30th if we do not take affirmative action in this legislative session. As of the most recent December, December of 2010, there are 10,093 elder Alaskans benefiting from this program. These are low-income senior citizens. The oldest recipient of these benefits is 105 years old, and the average age of these low-income senior Alaskans, depending upon this benefit, are 75 years old. The senior benefits program, as established, provides a monthly payment, monthly cash assistance to those Alaska residents 65 years of age or older, whose household income is less than 175% of the federal poverty guidelines for Alaska. The program is structured with a three-tiered needs-based payment structure. Individuals, low-income individuals, can receive $250 a month under this program if their income is less than 75% of the federal poverty guideline. That, to To qualify for that $250 a month benefit, that equates to an individual in Alaska, a senior over age 65, whose household income is less than $10,200 a year. The payment goes down to $175 a month for individuals whose income is within 75 to 100% of the federal poverty guideline. That roughly equates from $10,000 to $16,000 a year. And the payment drops to $125 a month for individuals whose income is between 100% and 175% of the federal poverty guideline. The current federal poverty guideline, at the 175% calculation, would be $23,800 a year annual household income. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make it very clear here that House Bill 16 does not change the program. It does not change the benefits. It only extends the program 4 years, a program that has been well vetted and proven extremely beneficial to Alaska's seniors. The program, in that it is based, the poverty calculations are based on the federal poverty level, allows the program to be somewhat flexible, responsive to changing economic conditions as those federal poverty guidelines are annually revised by the U.S. government. Currently, the program does cost approximately $20 million a year. It is in, I emphasize again, it's been in our base budget now for 4 years. This is not an incremental expenditure. It is a maintenance commitment. The program is structured statutorily with provisions that allows in the instance where the money appropriated by the legislature for whatever reason may be insufficient to meet the consumer demands for the program, the beneficiary demands, the Department of Health and Human Services is authorized in statute very clearly to reduce or eliminate the benefit available to recipients so that they can meet the most pressing needs in the state. Again, it's a clause that allows the program to be nimble in relation to potential changing economic circumstances in the state. So I think it was very important we crafted this program 4 years ago with both that nimbleness provision as well as the sunset provision, both of which assure us as folks charged with due diligence responsibilities for the state treasury to be making a recurring determination as to whether this program is something we can or cannot afford. It is provisions that the senior community understands that this program is not an entitlement. It is something that we do when we have the means. However, as I look at the, and I'm speaking for myself and again my 14 Senate cross-sponsors of this bill, I think we all believe that we've looked at the state's current fiscal circumstances and really looking to the next 4 years, sincerely believe that based on our current fiscal projections, the senior benefits program merits being extended for that next 4 years, and that we're clearly going to have the resources to continue to provide this critical level of assistance to these low-income seniors, to whom, quite frankly, it's one of the handwritten letter in your bill packet, I think maybe the most compelling document that I've received on this. Again, it's a woman whose name I won't mention, but lives up in the Matsu Valley. A very sincere handwritten program who says that this program has been a source of great comfort and financial stability for that individual for the past 3 years. And she shudders to think what it would mean to the state's senior constituents who benefit greatly from this program if it were to be discontinued. I don't think there is any more compelling testimony available than that woman's handwritten note to us as legislators. I appreciate two members of this committee, Mr. Chairman, who've already heard this bill in a previous committee, and I appreciate their assistance in seeing it to this committee. And I certainly understand that your procedures are not to move bills with but one hearing, but if there is ever a bill that merits that consideration, it would be this one. This is a well-proven program. It does enjoy the benefit of the 14 Senate cross-sponsors, and we, myself and the agency, are here to answer any and all questions that you would like to bring forward. Mr. Chairman, I'd be very happy to stand down and follow or respond to any questions or concerns that you folks might have, sir. Thank you very kindly for the opportunity.
All right. Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Hocker for your explanation of the bill. On the background information sheet, the first section, 47, 45, 301, the next to the last line in that section anyhow, it says the department may reduce or eliminate the cash benefit available to recipients based on the appropriations. That may reduce, is that intended to be a proration? Is that what we would expect, that if there were not enough appropriated, that it would be reduced on a prorata base, or is that actually explained in the regulation?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, and begging the committee's indulgence, one of the current disabilities I'm suffering is a chemotherapy-induced neuropathy, which means that I've got nerve damage and I'm having a hard time hearing your question. I believe you asked how the department would manifest that provision in statute that allows them to reduce or eliminate cash benefits among recipients.
Correct.
And thank you, sir. The department is here and can answer you specifically, but in the to date, we have not had to reduce or eliminate benefits, so we have not manifest those. But historically, it has always been the agency's policy and procedure to do ratable reductions as early as possible in a fiscal year, so you don't reach a point where you've spent all your appropriation and then you've got 2 months with nothing to spend. So again, as they monitor, the agency monitors the demands on the program, the amount of beneficiaries signed up, and if they see a shortfall of funding coming by the end of the year, they would make course corrections in the middle of the fiscal year to minimize the consequence on the individuals. And historically, that has been a ratable reduction. It's a very similar to provision to what we have in statute for ratably reducing Medicaid programs should there be inadequate funding.
Follow up. Maybe we can have someone from the department come forward. And just for the, while we're getting the department up here, just for the folks watching at home, we do not see a shortfall in the revenue if this bill goes forward, and any changes in the amount that the seniors will be getting every month due to short funding by the legislature. But hypothetically, maybe you can explain how that process would work in the event that we did not have $12 billion excess in cash laying around and we had a revenue shortfall, and it had to fall back against the seniors, which is highly unlikely right now.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Bill Struer. I'm Commissioner, Department of Health and Social Services. I cannot answer that question at this point. I'm going to have to get you an answer, or Ron Creer, the Director of the Division of Public Assistance, is on the phone.
All right. Well, we can go on and get back to us. It's unlikely to happen. We can move on with the legislation that is enacted. The funding will be there, and the checks will be on time. We have any other questions? Seems that we've got you up in the hot seat. We can, Senator Thomas, you had a follow-up.
Well, just one. Some language repeatedly through here says "see delayed repeal note," and I'm not sure what that means. And it's at the end of each section, so I'm not sure what that means. I don't think I've ever seen that on a.
And Mr. Chairman, with apologies, if I could ask for a clarification of that question again, neuropathy is right. Causing me difficulty understanding.
I need a question of what you're looking at, Senator Thomas.
I'm looking at the House Bill 16 background information, and at the end of each section it says "see delayed repeal note" for each of them, and I just was curious what that was in reference to. I don't find a delayed repeal note anywhere in the packet, so I was just curious what it meant.
Right. We'll have to come back now. I don't even know where you're looking at in the bill packet.
I don't see it.
We'll have a brief at ease. Come on. Rep. Hawker, can you help us with that one?
Mr. Chairman, and again, apologies for my hearing disability here, but as it's been pointed out, The document you're looking at is a cut and paste from the Alaska statutes. The reference is, as folks know, that if you're going into the Alaska statutes and there's a footnotes to sections of statute, that is what that parenthetical notation refers to. If we actually pulled up an Alaska statute book, there would be a footnote that talks about the consequences of the call it the delayed repeal. That is the four-year sunset that we are now here today addressing.
Okay, thank you.
That makes sense. You see that parenthetically on all of these section headings. It is simply there in the, again, if we look at the full statute books, to remind everyone that this statute is a temporal statute.
Right. Okay. And then on the, I guess for the department, is it safe to assume the administration supports the extension?
Mr. Chairman, the department supports this extension.
Okay. And then can we get a justification why there's six positions needed to send these checks out once a month? What can you help me with that? Is that?
Mr. Chairman, the six positions are a continuation of the current staffing allocated to the program.
Okay.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator or Rep. Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Adding to that, I knew that question had been raised, and in doing my own, you know, follow-up and research on that, I was reminded that this program is an eligibility-based program, a program that there are 10,000 beneficiaries, and that eligibility is, you know, as both people come on new under the program, as they leave the state, as a very dynamic population base here, and that the number of employees is really reflective of truly what it takes to manage the eligibility status, both from providing us the assurance that the program is not abused and that individuals applying for the program are in fact qualified. So it is a fairly labor, in that regards, the six persons reflect the labor necessitated to operate the program.
Okay. And then if you can help us, just since we're televised around the state, how are they notified that the program exists, and is there differences in the for the rural areas that are more remote than, say, Anchorage and Juneau and Sitka and those?
Mr. Chairman, the program is carried through our advertising, through the web site, and through other programs, as well as the local Division of Public Assistance offices. In terms of rural access versus urban access, I believe the exposure is similar based on any other program offered either through the department or through the state of Alaska.
And then could you spin us up a little bit about the qualifying issues dealing with seniors in the Pioneers home and how those are dealt with?
Mr. Chairman, the question about seniors in the Pioneer homes, why they are not eligible, it's simply a matter of the program set. Pioneer home fees are set up such that any additional revenue that a resident obtains is offset. It's used as an offset against the fees in the program. Since the majority of the residents in the Pioneer homes are Medicaid, it's essential that we maximize Medicaid. If, for instance, a resident receives a subsidy, that money is used to offset the Medicaid payment that is made, and it increases the general fund contribution and decreases the federal Medicaid participation for that resident.
And does that also include the seniors in the Pioneers home that may be, you know, paying their own bill once a month? Or
yes, sir.
Sure. So that's everybody.
Yes.
And even though you happen to be fortunate enough to be able to have the liquidity in your later years to pay those substantial bills every month, that still impacts the Medicaid issue for those people?
I would have to check on the answer to that one, sir.
OK. Okay, maybe you could check on that and get back to us on that. And then maybe a little deeper explanation when you get back to us on the offset issue with the seniors. And then if you could, just as a reminder, those seniors that don't have the financial ability to pay for their stay at the Pioneer Home, how do they attain, you know, some spend money, and so they can go to the hair shop or go play bingo or what have you, or to the barber shop?
Mr. Chairman, I'll get you answers to all those questions.
Okay. Any other questions for the department? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Struer, I'm not all that familiar with the program. I was wondering, are there any of these checks that are being mailed to people that live out of state?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I believe that these are all resident checks only.
Okay, and one last question, Mr. Chairman. Are there provisions in case those seniors have to go out for medical reasons or otherwise, to go ahead and being discontinued as a beneficiary, in realizing they're coming back, and also realizing that the bills that they have for their residence, their home, are still going on here in Alaska, especially in the wintertime? Is there any provisions for that, or maybe the bill sponsor knows the answer?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the statutory crafting is that the beneficiaries must be Alaska residents. In fact, that was one of the items that was brought to my attention in the December payments, that there's a chart here that shows there are actually four or eight, it's the second page of the Senior Benefits Program fact sheet from the department. You can see there are eight unidentified recipients at the bottom, and those were recipients who had left the state of Alaska, notified the state subsequent to that, and they're in review as to whether those payments should have been made. The program also specifically, statutorily, provides for a recovery provisions for any benefits that were inappropriately paid. That's Alaska Statute Section 47.45.308. And the administrator, in this case the department, does in fact have regulatory procedures in place to comply with that component, that section of statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other final questions for the bill sponsor or his guest? Senator Thomas.
I guess just almost a thought, as we become more reliant on electronic communication, and particularly in the case of seniors and low-income seniors, it just seems like that becomes more of a problem for people like that, simply due to many of them that maybe even never worked with computers when they were in the jobs that they performed during their working life, and particularly when we get to the rural area. So I don't know, it's a question, it's just maybe more of a concern of how the information is distributed and how it is requested back and that type of thing. And I don't care for a long explanation now, but just it is something that causes me a little concern, because I know there are a lot of folks, even in my district, which is a relatively urban district, that do not care for or do not have computers and access to computers and that type of thing. So anyhow, just a concern, I guess.
Okay, thank you. We've got one fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services. There's a $20,485,300 in general funds currently in the governor's FY12 budget. The first column of the fiscal note reflects an addition of $1,968.1 in general funds. That's in millions. Needed to fully fund the program for 12, since the administration, you know, is already aware of the true cost of the program, it would be preferred that the governor brings forward a budget amendment to fund the item fully, so we don't have to do it through a fiscal note. And there is a two-page spreadsheet attached to the fiscal note showing the case summaries and the expenditure forecast. We'll now go to the off-net. We'll start with Ron Cray here, the Department of Public Services. I'm not sure the way this is listed if you want to testify or not. So, are you online?
Senator Stedman, for the record, my name is Ron Creer. I'm the acting director of the Division of Public Assistance, and I was online to respond to any questions, and there were a flurry of them, which I did not jot down, but I could probably address many of those questions, but if the commissioner would prefer that we do it in writing, we can do that as well.
Yeah, we'll do it in writing to the committee, and then we'll disperse it amongst the members. Okay. That concludes that section. Then we'll come into the you might want to turn the mic down a little bit, please. We'll come into the room. Daniello? Denise? I probably butchered your last name, but if you could introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, even though you've been here several times before, and speak to the bill, please.
Good morning, Chair Stedman and members of the committee. My name is Denise Daniello, and I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 16 to extend the senior benefits program on behalf of the commission, as well as the 10,000-plus older Alaskans who receive benefits from this program. This program provides a crucial safety net for many older Alaskans. It helps to pay for basic life necessities like food, heating fuel, medicine, housing, and other basic necessities. Approximately one in five seniors receive benefits from the Senior Benefits Program, and that's not a lot of seniors. Most seniors are doing okay financially, but it represents a persistent minority of older Alaskans who have serious financial need. The commission came out in support of this legislation when it was first introduced back in 2007. It has been a very important program for seniors, particularly seniors who live in rural areas of the state. The Department of Health and Social Services recognizes nine regions in the state, and Region 1, which includes the Bethel and Wade-Hampton areas, is the region that has the highest rate of participation in the program. More than 50% of the older Alaskans who live there receive benefits from senior benefits. The Region 8, which includes the Aleutian Islands, is also an area of high use of senior benefits, which is more than twice the statewide rate for senior benefits. There's also other areas of the state, such as the North Slope Borough, as well as urban areas that have lower rates of participation. So it's not utilized by all seniors, but for those who primarily need the program. We are in support of the program. We think it's good public policy. And it particularly helps people who are most vulnerable to economic stresses. It helps them to live with dignity, maintain their independence, and also helps to support their health and well-being. So we thank you for your support of this program.
Okay, thank you. Marie Darling. We've seen both these ladies many times here before dealing with these issues, so it's good to see you back, and certainly welcome everybody to Senate Finance, even though it seems like we hardly even stopped for the summer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Marie Darlin, and I am the coordinator for AARP's Capital City Task Force. And you have our letter of support for this bill, which is in your file, so I won't repeat that. But we do want to just emphasize that we want our retirees to be able to remain in Alaska, and the Senior Benefits Program helps them do that. And we also want to remind you that those people spend all of that money right in our state. And seniors are a vital part of all of our communities, and we need them, and this does allow them to remain here. So we ask for your support for the bill, and thank you for that support, hopefully.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the list a sign-up list for everybody in here. May I have the bill sponsor back, please? We have any final questions for the bill sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, when I was answering earlier, I had neglected to answer part of the question, half the question raised by Senator Olson, if I might conclude that answer.
Yes, and you might want to repeat the question for those at home that are watching so they can follow along, please.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and also just for the record-keeping purposes, I am Representative Mike Hawker, District 32, Anchorage. Through the chair, Senator Olson, you'd also asked the question about what happens to folks who are out of the state. Is there a provision to protect them from losing their benefits? And that question is specifically addressed in this existing statute. It's Alaska Statute Section 47.45.304. And when we crafted this bill initially, we recognized that that situation exists, particularly in our senior population. That is, folks are out of state for various reasons and wanted to make certain that they were not inappropriately denied access to this program. And the statute provides very specifically that a person, the general rule is that when a person leaves the state, they lose their benefit. Then we craft the exceptions to the general rule. The exceptions are, number one, to receive medical treatment for that individual. Number two, to accompany the individual's family member who is receiving medical treatment outside of the state. And then item three was ultimately the catch-all. And I remember when we crafted this because it was, how in the world do we sit here in the hallowed halls of Juneau? How do we anticipate every reason that an individual may legitimately be out of the state? And with section three, we empowered the department to make that determination on a case-by-case basis. That last exception to the general rule is that a person may continue to receive a benefit if they are out of state on a vacation, business trip, or other absence of less than 30 consecutive days, and then the empowerment clause, unless the individual has applied for and received a time extension from the department for special circumstances. So again, I think this is, again, one of those pieces of legislation that those of us that were here and participated in its crafting can truly be quite proud that we've accomplished a statutory construct that really provides the adequate authority for the agency to be responsive to the needs of the public, but also protects the state's treasury from abuse. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Rep. Hawker. Do we need a final question? Okay. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. That concludes today's meeting. Tomorrow morning, our next meeting, not tomorrow, our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 9th, 9 a.m. We're going to hear a presentation by the Department of Corrections on the Goose Creek Prison. We're going to go back and kind of take a holistic view of this issue from its inception and roll it forward to anticipated budget impacts and other impacts on the state over the next several years. Unless anybody has any final comments or concerns, this meeting is adjourned.